Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Phil Cerulli, the CIO for the Managing and Operations Contractor for the Savannah River Site, a Department of Energy National Lab. Phil, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you very much, Jason. You're welcome.
So let's just talk some basics. So the Savannah River Site, I was on the website looking at, trying to learn a little bit about it. Give me a sense, what is the mission of the Savannah River Site?
I'll start off really with giving you a little bit of background. It was developed in the 1950s, basically as a need to produce some nuclear technologies and solutions for the United States government. And over the years, the mission has changed. Recently, it is more of a cleanup mode, and the Department of Energy had decided to close the site in the 90s. Currently, right now, it is an enduring site, mainly because we've got other folks on the site, such as NNSA. And NNSA is probably going to be the future tenant after EM turns it over. One other thing that for the future, you'll be hearing a lot about Enterprise SRS. And the Enterprise SRS is to continue making sure the site continues to become an enduring site with missions that look at nuclear energy, clean energy, and environmental stewardship and national security.
So a wide mission, but when you say an enduring site, obviously we know what enduring means. It lasts, it continues on. But what do you, when you put it in that context of an enduring site, what's that mean?
Well, right now today, we do a lot of nuclear waste processing, both liquid and solid waste, and those will continue as many nuclear facilities around the world become decommissioned. So we do process waste from all over the world. The enduring part is really to create a research area so that people want to come here and want to develop new missions, such as small modular nuclear reactors and things of that nature that will continue the legacy of what Department of Energy performs over time.
Okay, that's clear. I mean, obviously, when you say enduring, you're going to continue kind of your old role, but start to move into some new roles to obviously keep you guys moving forward. Now, how does the Savannah River site fit in with some of the other Energy Department sites?
The Department of Energy, I think, has three sites that are similar to us that are have a national laboratory presence on the site and do operations. So from those other sites, we do a lot of collaboration with. For example, for Hanford, we do a lot of work from both the processing of nuclear waste back and forth as well as collaborating on new technologies. So basically, through the laboratory as well, the laboratory does a lot of collaboration with all of the other laboratories across the DOE sites as well as outside the DOE complex. So it's a facility that kind of has multi-tenants, multi-contractors, multi-missions, and does processing of waste, as I said before, around the world.
My understanding, are you one of two or one of three CIOs at the Savannah River site?
There's actually my counterpart. We'll start with the Department of Energy. DOE has a CIO that manages everybody on the site, and his name is Lee Juan Belt, and he reports up to the EM CIO, which is Gene Beard, who then reports up to the DOE CIO, Mike Lakaitis. So that's one CIO from a DOE perspective on site. Then I'm basically the overall CIO from an M&O perspective, but there aren't any other CIOs within the other contractors. So we provide most of the IT services. Recently, we did name a CIO for the National Laboratory, so she's got a line into me. Her name is Dr. Mary Harris. So really, there's really only three technical CIOs on the site, but most of the IT work and provisioning comes from my office.
So your mission is to support what then? Is it support just the M&O contractor or all the M&O contractors on the site? Or do you support most of the site, you know, from an IT perspective, a network of storage, that type of thing?
The answer is kind of a mixed bag. We are a multidisciplinary site. We've got Shaw Riva, we've got SRR, which is a division of URS. Of course, we're SRNS. And we've got other tenants like the U.S. Forest Service and an ecology lab in Georgia Tech University. So there's a variety of tenants on here. We provide services in various functions for each of those independently. So there's SLAs between myself and those entities. To give you an example, SRR, which is one of the other contractors that does liquid waste, we perform for them all the email and storage and a lot of the site enterprise applications, but then they have their own proprietary and critical applications they need, and so they have an IT manager that manages that for them. Other areas like Lackenhaw that does the security for the site, we provide services to make sure that the data that they have with all the surveillance and all that they do is provided to them. But I do not provide email and some of the other standard services.
So that gives you kind of a real broad mission in many ways as a CIO, because you're not just worried about what's in front of you, but you really kind of have to deal with the people around you. And sometimes they only want a piece of the pie. Sometimes they want to eat most of the pie. Is that an added challenge for you, or are you guys fairly centralized in terms of how IT is managed?
I think we're fairly centralized, but it is a challenge only from the standpoint that throughout all of that, I'm still responsible for safeguarding the security, and like cybersecurity, for example, on the site. So all of the network perimeter and everything else associated with the network, which they still reside on, I'm responsible for. So it is a challenge, and so I have to kind of make sure that whatever they do has to follow the practice of the Department of Energy, which I have to uphold. And through that, actually, we're all on the same mission. Nobody wants their secrets to get outside of the complex. So it does present a challenge, but it makes it easier because we're all working at the same goal.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more. We'll talk about your priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Phil Cerulli, the CIO for the Managing and Operations Contractor of the Savannah River Site for the Department of Energy.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's Capacity Services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Phil Cerulli, the CIO for the Managing and Operations Contractor for the Savannah River Site in the Department of Energy. Now, Phil, before break, we learned a little bit about the Savannah River Site, what it does. We learned about your role as CIO and how you work with some of the other CIOs on site. Let's talk about your priorities. What are you hoping to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
Jason, the biggest piece for me over the next 6 to 9 months is to continue on the path of mobility. This site, and I can't say it enough, was a closure site. And being that it was a closure site means no investment was made in the infrastructure. And you can think of that as roads and commodes and all the way up to and including the network and IT facilities. So with that being said, it's been a challenge to, find money in an environment now where really the country doesn't have money. Therefore, it translates down that you have less money to work with even in the facility and on site. So mobility is very important. There wasn't any investment made in it. And now in order to make sure that people can travel around the site when they need to or be in their own desk and do the same amount of work without having to travel or without having to go up to D.C. or any other place, I'm really pretty much spending a lot of priority on that. And those things include video conferencing. You've got the iPads and iPhones issue, which we're embarking on and have already in a pilot mode for that. It's providing the tools so that people can get to their information, do their job anywhere, anytime, on any device. And all CIOs hear those three words, anytime, any place, on any device. So that's pretty much my priority, and we're on track to do that. I'm very proud of the team, and you could ask the question, how am I doing that without any money, if you want.
Well, I thought you just answered for me.
I will do that. Basically, I've only been in the federal space here 2 years. I come from a commercial side of the house. And there's a lot of tips and tricks and techniques that you can use to find money when there is no money. Some of that is renegotiating contracts. Contracts that most, I think, facilities probably have are based on GSA schedule, which the government has done a fine job of putting those in place. However, for me, I look at it as a starting point, that I'm not going to pay GSA, that I'm not going to pay more than that, but I'm going to pay a lot less. And so I negotiate better deals. And then I'm able to take that money, and some I have to give back to the facility, of course, but some of it, a majority of it, I'm able to reinvest. And that's how I'm is one of the major techniques that I've used to kind of get money to be able to buy all the wireless equipment and things I need for mobility.
All right, well, I know there's more, but let me jump in here and talk a little bit about this wireless priority. When you say negotiate better deals, are you talking about right now we have a contractor to provide help desk and it's $5 a seat and now it's going to be $3 a seat? Is it that type of negotiation or give me an example?
It's all the above. Let's start with that one, for example. Like, you know, for our help desk, we have staff augs that man the help desk. And it may be that in the years past that people thought paying a certain amount was appropriate and no problem for handling a help desk. In other words, maybe we're over-servicing and we're providing too much service for what is needed for the site. So now I look at it and say, hey, we don't need to be sending people out to the desk side every day in a minute. You know, so now the response time is we'll get to it in 6 hours. So now I can look and provide a cheaper service, in other words, cheaper labor, and get staff folks to come in and perform those services that don't charge as much. So that's an example. Another one is, let's say I have a deal with, I'll just pick on IBM because I work for them. If I have a deal with IBM, we're a Lotus Notes shop, and I want to bring in some of the products, but I don't have the money to pay for it. Well, I restructure the deal that I have, hopefully to pay less on what I'm doing, still have that same software in here, and bring in some additional software. So IBM sells me some new services. I'm not paying anymore, and IBM's happy because they are at least bringing in some additional products on the site. And that translates to me buying some services from them, for example, in the area of consulting and so forth. So it's a variety of areas, both hardware, software, and services that I'm able to renegotiate to bring costs down.
And roughly how much cost are you talking about? Can you give me a percentage? You're talking about 10% less, 30% less? And I know it differs, but across the board, what would you say?
I'd say I may get disagreement from other CIOs, but if you can't get 10% out, then you're sleeping in your job. I mean, that's a pretty easy thing to do almost any time. In mine, it depends. I mean, if I will go across the board, I can't average it up and say, Jason, it might be 20, but I can tell you that in some cases, it's been 30% in some of the deals that I've done. And that's no reflection on anybody past had the job before me. It's just how things kind of were run, and knowing that it's a closure site, there's not maybe a lot of emphasis that was put in those consulting or agreements at that time.
Let me jump back really far for a sec, because you kept saying a closure site. Is the site still going to remain open, but under the NNSA, or when you say closure site, did someone change their mind? It's no longer going to be closed?
Yeah, we say a closure site. It's basically that, you know, the Cold War's won, and so most of the processing, nuclear processing, would be done or done at other facilities. And so there was a lot of effort to close some of the facilities that or entomb them, and to clean up the contaminated areas that may be on the site. And for all of those things, that land is now available back to give back to, whether it's to the state, the community, or used for other federal interests. So that was kind of the idea. But NNSA is a very strong entity that is going to continue doing their work for years to come. And besides that, it's the other part of it, which is you've got a national treasure here of the facilities that are here, both research and operational and knowledge, that we need to grow that and continue to maintain that. So I would say kind of a change of mind, change of mission, and I think it's going to be very well for the state of South Carolina to continue the site.
All right, that helps, because that clarifies, because I know you've said that a few times, closure site, and people may say, well, if they're closing, why are you continue to invest? But you're really not closing. It's just you're changing mission in many ways. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some more about wireless and some other priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Phil Cerulli, the CIO and for the Managing and Operations Contractor for the Savannah River Site for the Department of Energy.
Sound familiar?
Where's my data stored? Who owns it? How many duplicates exist? How much file data is unused? How are we going to pay for all of it?
Vion Corporation's capacity services is the answer. Your organization needs a trusted advisor with the right technical tools and the right financial expertise to solve big storage problems for good. For over 31 years, Vion Corporation and Hitachi Data Systems have been planning and preparing to solve big data problems for the government at the exabyte level. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. Whether your organization calls it cloud, utility computing, managed services, or capacity services, at the core is the rapid provisioning of information technology infrastructure. At Vion Corporation, they pioneered capacity services 10 years ago. Vion was awarded the first and currently holds the largest federal government capacity services contract. They provide government IT owners an agile financial vehicle for meeting mission-critical IT needs. Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been delivering IT solutions to the government for over 31 years. Visit Vion.com to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today is Phil Cerulli, the CIO for the Managing and Operations Contractor for the Savannah River Site in the Department of Energy. Now, Phil, before break, we talked a lot about your big priority, mobile computing, giving mobility to the employees. And you said some very special words, iPads, iPhones, embarking on a pilot. Give me a sense of where you're going down that path.
The facility, again, with the infrastructure not being able to necessarily support a lot of the mobility solutions that we want to provide, I've had to spend time and effort to first get the network and the site infrastructure up to speed. So I'm going to lay a little bit of the groundwork before I tell you the details. One of the first things is we needed to upgrade all of our switches and firewalls and such to be able to support the kind of traffic that we're going to be throwing across the network. And so we are just about finishing that piece up. In tandem to that is that the site, again, it's a 310-square-mile facility. They're about 90% is undeveloped. So a lot of pine trees, a lot of lakes. It's a, say, kind of a rugged terrain, not mountainous per se. But with that, you have to really think about how do you get coverage across the site. I can't entice Verizon to come in and put towers all over there where there's no people. But at the same time, I need towers to be able to get the cell signal. So Verizon is our partner in this. We are kind of in that part of the state. Verizon is one of the top wireless providers. So we are putting some towers up on site, and that'll help with the cellular capability, but it's not going to be 100% in a complete red area like you see on the maps on TV with Verizon coverage. To augment that, we are using WiMAX. WiMAX is kind of where you are able to, it's a line of sight technology, so that's hard because of all the trees. So I have to mount them, these access points, up on poles across the site, and then allow me to get some kind of coverage, wireless coverage, in a tune of a quarter of a mile, a third of a mile. So it's much wider coverage than just the normal access point someone has in their house. Then the next phase is getting those wireless access points like we all have in our houses to be able to have that available in buildings. And we are embarking on doing that. We've done our warehouses, a couple of our warehouses, which allows for barcoding technologies to be introduced. And then the last phase is to allow wireless really pretty much wherever you kind of go through from building to outside in the areas that you travel. So to do all those things sets the stage for iPads and iPhones for us to use, but we have to go slow like all government entities because those devices typically were built for the commercial or entities for retail, and now we're trying to put that into enterprise, whether it's commercial or federal or public, which is most of those that infrastructure is not in place. So what the pilot is there, we are buying government provided iPhones and iPads. So we're actually pushing calendar, contacts, and email, and some application data to them. And it's in a safe and secure manner. It's in a pilot mode. And then once we get Apple gets their iOS operating system FIPS 140 compliant, then we'll be able to do those things in production mode across the site. The other phase of this thing is to allow people to have their personal iPhones and iPads to be able to come into the site. Today, they can through Citrix. And Citrix is we were one of the first, I think, in the complex that allowed personal devices to be able to access SRS data from outside. So if somebody has a personal laptop, desktop, or iPad, they can come in through Citrix with a token and see email and calendars and other applications like time and attendance and timekeeping, those kinds of things. So that has already been in place for a year. And the iPads have, you know, like everybody wants an iPad and an iPhone. The other part of this thing is how do I manage the costs? Because they are expensive. And so what we're embarking on is if you're going to get an iPad, then you don't need a laptop. So you maybe only have a desktop. So we're trying to look at reducing the number of devices that the government provides or that we pay for, but still maximize the ability for people to get to that data, again, anytime, anywhere, on any device.
I think several agencies are going on that same path as you guys, saying, listen, you can't have three different or four different devices. If you get an iPad, that's all you're getting. You may not even get a desktop. Maybe they'll dock it into your main system. One of the big issues you hear about, again, is security. A lot of people seem to be using Citrix around to help create that demilitarized zone, to add that layer of security. How are you guys dealing with that security issue?
That's how we wall them off, is that so the government-provided laptops, we use some technologies called Traveler and AirWatch is what we use for managing the devices. But it's push. So we're doing push technologies. It's pushing the data out to the device. But we can wipe it at any time. So they're not able to bring the device into our network. And that's a key, because we don't, you know, until we get the compliance issue sorted out, there's some vulnerabilities in there that if they're on our network, then they're, and people hack that device, then they're into our network. So we are walling them off. They're not on the network. They're just getting information pushed to them, and we have the ability to wipe and destroy the device if there's anything going out. But on top of that, we have all the normal things that everybody pretty much has. Is you have different things like Fidelis and other applications that are blocking stuff before they would go to these devices. So that's pretty much it. And then the Citrix piece is, again, the same thing. You know, we are allowing that to come in, but it's on a secure network, and they're not storing anything on their personal devices. So they're able to look and see and touch and feel, but they can't print, they can't store it on their local devices. So that one, it's been pretty safe and secure for us as well.
Let me jump over to another recent project. You guys are implementing a ERP system, which is, I think, the most scariest words for a CIO, implementing ERP, which is something that a lot of agencies have not had a lot of success with. Where are you with it? And give me a sense of the benefits you're starting to see.
Just to give you a little bit of background for myself, I've done this probably easily about 15 times in my career. So the word is less scary to me, but I think it's the last one. I'm never going to go through another one, because they do take your breath away. They are something that keeps you up at night. For this particular one down here, we've had a number of legacy systems in the neighborhood of about 30 that have run almost everything from the procurement and supply chain to project controls to, of course, accounting and finance and ledger. So all of those systems are all disparate. They were all homegrown, and I think everybody has, a lot of people have the same situation or have had that same situation. So to go from that to for us, PeopleSoft Oracle solution was a big step. Again, I can't overemphasize, if you are, we're determined to be a closure site, you're not looking to bring in and change those kinds of applications. So they've been around for 15, 20 years, many of those apps. Well, now I'm happy to tell you, we've installed both the ledger and the general accounting and the supply chain and project controls. We have completed that effort as of early October this year. And in fact, we're going live with the general accounting piece end of October. So we are looking good in that area. And as far as I think you were asking, you know, what kind of benefits that we've had, well, certainly going from a homegrown legacy system, if I talk from the IT perspective, there's all kinds of savings, because we had a mainframe. We've had a number of people had a support code written years ago, and it's scary if those people retire, then I have a major concern. Well, now we're able to shut down a number of those applications. We have already shut down about 10. I think we've got about 5 to go. The mainframe will be shut down by the end of the year. And so from the IT perspective, a lot of benefits. From the business side, again, loads of benefits. I mean, we have in training out to the people, we realized that people didn't know where their stuff was. And this is not uncommon in anybody that is procuring goods and services. Well, that's what we use. Where's our stuff? Well, they know where their stuff is now, because they can order it through catalogs. We use Venemaya, which is what NNSA uses. And it's kind of like an e-marketplace. And all of our suppliers have to put their catalog entries out there. It's managed in a secure manner. But our people now can go and browse those catalogs with a secure way out to the catalog punch out, and are able to browse and purchase those things off of our contracts, which we have been, again, renegotiating and saving money that way. So for the end users, they now know where their stuff is. Buyers aren't involved, and it's just them and that supplier or that catalog to get their thing. From a finance perspective, it's the normal stuff. Closing, month-end, quarter-end, year-end closing, you know, used to take many days, weeks, if not longer. Certainly cut that down to days and hours, and we are just now going through a year-end close, which has gone fantastically quicker than ever before. So it reduces the number of people, the number of reporting, and the number of transactions, and the number of wait time on mainframe to get that stuff done.
When you look back at what you know you've done for this ERP and other ERPs, because as we talked about, that's a really tough thing for a lot of agencies. What is the key? How to be successful with implementing an ERP?
I think it's kind of like a three-leg stool. You've got your partner that you rely on, which may be both the software provider or integrator, consulting if you want to call. That's a huge leg to the stool. The other one is your customers, the people that, you know, that are going to be using the system, whether it's the finance people or the supply chain buyer people or whatever. And then you've got the IT group who really have to run and implement, manage, maintain, and pull the whole thing together. All three of those things, if one is off kilter, you're toast. So we've had the privilege of having a pretty good small business that helped us, and the company's called BTRG, and they've brought in some very good talent. That's one thing. Second thing is my IT group is very good. They haven't necessarily gone through this before, but I've brought in a couple of people who have and augmented that. We've stripped them of the day-to-day responsibility so that they were only focusing on the new. That's another thing that you kind of have to do. You can't serve two masters, keep the lights on, and doing new stuff. And then with the business, you have to form partnerships, and you have to take them along somewhat slowly because it's not if you've been working and doing this same kind of accounting principle or accounting techniques and supply chain techniques for 20 years, and with a system you're familiar with, now you're going to something that's totally foreign to you, and the rules are changing somewhat, or the processes are changing somewhat. It's very, very difficult. So the change management is huge in it as well. And then finally, for the infrastructure of the whole project, you got to have a steering group. You've got to have those entities, the supplier or your partner, part of your group. You got to have the VPs for finance, supply chain, project controls, and IT. And you all have to be steering this project, and it takes a considerable percentage of your time to make sure this thing stays on track. I'm very proud. You know, most of these projects become money pits, and people have a terrible time, and they end up failing. And I will not talk about it, but it's failed here at the site before in years past with SAP. Well, this one's been a success, and it's not without problems. I will be happy to talk to you about that, but it has been a success, and I'm very proud that it's not been it's been up there with what I've done with IBM and with Fluor.
Let me ask about cost, schedule, performance. Did you meet your cost? Did you meet your schedule? Did you meet your performance?
Absolutely. And from the finance part of this thing, we actually underspent, which was good. So, and that's a really hard thing to do when you're looking at a two-year project, to be able to run out and be able to not have to ask for more money, or to be able, in this case, spend less money. Scheduling, we made every one of the schedules, and believe me, like everybody knows, it is very suspect what you're going to make it. There's so much complications and issues that arise during the course of putting this project in place. But you have to deal with them, you have to overcome them, and you have to be there from an executive standpoint to support the team and take the things down. So all of those pieces, Jason, I'm pretty proud of. The team did a very good job. And if we didn't do it, we as a contractor wouldn't have earned a fee from our customer.
All right, very good. I think we could talk for a lot longer, but unfortunately we are out of time. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and my special guest today was Phil Cerulli, the CIO for the Managing and Operations Contractor of the Savannah River Site in the Department of Energy. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Jason, thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
With more than 550,000 federal government workers eligible for retirement in the next few years, it's imperative industries build cooperation with the next generation of leaders in government. Join AFSCEA Bethesda on December 8th for a panel of rising stars from USDA, NASA, DHS, GSA, and the RAT Board to hear their perspective on cloud computing, mobile IT, data center consolidation, and strengthening program management at the Bethesda North Marriott. Register today at afsceabethesda.org/DEC breakfast.
Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Dan Gordon, OFPP Administrator.
After I leave, you're going to see my successors and the wonderful staff here in the Office of Federal Procurement Policy continuing our efforts. We've been working with the Hill, with the appropriators and others to ensure that there is adequate funding for the acquisition workforce of the agencies. We're going into challenging times, but we are going to be focused on protecting and strengthening the acquisition workforce.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federal. Drive.